Reconciliation is just as much about you as it is the other person. What do you need to make the relationship feel safe and whole? One of the reasons you might be having trouble with reconciliation in your relationships is that you might not have even communicated these answers to yourself. Relational healing starts with honesty, but honesty is hard. Frameworks like the Johari window help you see what you already know. You have blind spots, ones you might not be able to see yourself. That's what community and accountability are for. The discussion about how to establish that, that's part of what we're here to talk about today. Welcome to the Ruth and Scott podcast. We're your hosts, Ruth Jefferson and Dr. Scott Goschalk. I'm Ruth Jefferson, coming to you with experience gained from growing up primarily in the South, in Texas and Mississippi, and from being a student across various areas, facilitating adult instruction across the nonprofit sector, and serving for a bit in Texas and Arizona as a substitute teacher and tutor. I've also worked to establish and facilitate educational enrichment programs for adult learners and extracurricular programs for kids that facilitated partnerships between educators, parents, and learners. My co-host, Dr. Scott Goschalk, has served for over 31 years in education and community service, with emphasis in cross-cultural, inner-city, and urban education settings as a teacher, administrator, and community activist. He has also served as a full-time professor of education and as an adjunct professor for a number of colleges and universities. There's so much more that I could say about Scott, and you'll learn more about him and about both of us as you continue to listen to the Ruth and Scott podcast. We'll get into today's conversation in just a second. Before we do, thank you for listening. Remember to visit podcast.votmg.org to subscribe to our newsletter for reads and resources built with you in mind. I'm passing the mic now to my co-host, someone I admire and who I can't wait to connect with on today's topics.
Thanks, Ruth. Appreciate the kind introduction and, again, the wealth of experience and knowledge that you bring from really tremendous life experiences, as well as, again, the tremendous skills-based subject matter expertise that you bring in this area. So I'm looking forward to our conversation today as we talk through it. And I think you hit on some really, key topics and pieces with reconciliation, is that idea of honesty, idea of blind spots, accountability. I'll talk more about that, accountability from my perspective too. And I can share some stories. Like you said, with my background working with education primarily for the last many years, and then working with a lot of teams and corporate culture building, however you want to put it, strategic planning, there's a lot that needs to happen with reconciliation for success to take place. You know, there's leaders out there like Peter Drucker who said that, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Well, you can't have a healthy culture. You can't have a healthy family culture. You can't have a healthy personal culture. If you're not dealing openly and honestly, like you stated, with reconciliation. Ruth, where do you want to start? What are your thoughts?
I just feel like reconciliation is really important as we look at the topics of relationships and communication that we're here to focus on today.
So I do a lot with premarital counseling and marital counseling. And again, probably the more accurate term, because I'm not a licensed counselor or anything, is more coaching. What it boils down to in those relationships is it boils down to trust and vulnerability-based trust, is that we can be vulnerable with each other to the point where we don't feel like someone's going to come back and attack us for being honest, attack us for being open about our weakness. And again, I don't like the term weakness, but where weakness comes in is we're not all great at everything, and we need other people's help. We need those relationships. God created us in his own image, and we were never meant to be alone. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. We need others. And in order to do that, we have to have positive relationships. And where the relationships get destroyed is when there's a break of trust, and then there's separation rather than reconciliation. That's just so vital. I've seen marriages on the brink and of destruction, but rise from the ashes because there is a proper, path of reconciliation taking place, where there's ownership on both sides, where there is accountability, where the different pieces that you brought up, and accountability, how I teach it is somewhat unique. But when we hold each other accountable, what we're really saying is you are important, and what you're doing and what you're saying is important. if we don't hold each other accountable and or ourselves accountable, what we're really saying is that you don't matter, what you're saying doesn't matter, what you're doing doesn't matter, because I'll just do it or I'll find someone else. And so that reconciliation is so vital. And I know you'll go deeper. I think you'll go deeper into this too, but reconciliation is not just something for the other person, so to say, but it's for us. It's for that healing.
Well, I think you said something very important there, referring back to the concepts of accountability and ownership. And you brought up an interesting scenario, especially when we're looking at relationships between couples. What could that look like in a marriage relationship, or even from your experience as a teacher, what could that look like in a classroom setting?
Yeah, I'll start with the marital piece first, you know, in couples with accountability, recognizing that your partner, the person with you, is important, that they do matter. So often people just want to get their way. It becomes all about me, all about me, all about me. And then we lose sight of that other person. And sometimes we think we're actually doing it to be helpful. You know, saying, oh, I'll take care of it. I'll fix it. I'll do it without involving the other person. Well, that diminishes their importance. And again, if we're not having that positive communication, if we're not having that, what I even would call positive conflict, a debate, an argument, a back and forth, it's not going to work. Because if we don't have that back and forth, then we're going to stuff it. We're going to stuff it. We're going to stuff it. And we're going to explode. And that's what I see with couples. I see that in schools. So like with schools, you know, it's fun when you go to like 2 8-year-olds that need reconciliation. It's different how they approach it, because the reconciliation usually is over something like, you know, he looked at me wrong, or she thinks I'm stupid, or they're ugly, or they're dumb, or they're whatever. And then they get into these fights, and especially in our society today with social media, even with 8-year-olds, it not only carries into the school day, but then it carries into the bus ride home, and it carries into the home life. And then you've got text messages or social media postings of, you know, this child's terrible. And then parents get involved, and you have to have that reconciliation for people to come together, even if they're just 8-year-olds. But now you take that argument of 8-year-olds, you know, your face is stupid, you're dumb, I don't like your hair, I don't like your nose, whatever it would be. Well, it's not so much different than the reconciliation we need with adults, where problems come in, is we end up, you know, getting into very similar, maybe it's a little more sophisticated in nature, but we just let those things bother us. And if we don't address those things and hold each other accountable, again, you're important, what you're doing is important, we're both important, we both need to be there, it's not going to get fixed. It's not going to get fixed. And that's where I think when you said before, and I'd love for you to expound upon that too, is where people have blind spots. Like you mentioned, if someone doesn't hold, if we're not holding each other accountable, that really creates blind spots, because we're really saying, again, I'll just do it all. I'll just do it. And it doesn't work. It has to be the mutual piece. Reconciliation is between 2, 3, 4 people, whatever it would be, a group. It's not just by ourselves, by nature of that. So we've got to be able to have that communication.
Well, I kind of want to go a little bit deeper into the example that you bring up when you're dealing with a student and another student says that they're dumb, because kind of as we're looking at that and looking back to the introduction as well, what is needed for the person to feel safe and to feel whole in a relationship? And I think in terms of that, it's important to identify that what is presented with a statement like that is also a feeling, even if not a reality, of a threat to something that's core in principle, like the identity of the child who is kind of the subject of a statement like that.
No, excellent. That's spot on. And with that is where I like to take students back to, and it works for adults too, but a couple of things. One, we need to instill in students' lives with reconciliation. If I don't believe that I have value in myself, if I am not in love with myself, it's very difficult for me to show love to others. And I'm not talking about egotistical, unhealthy love, but I'm talking about where we can wake up in the morning, look in the mirror and say, I love myself. I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. I'm a magnificent creation of God. And with young children, that's something that we have to help build in them. There may be some intuitiveness with that, but what I've recognized over the years and what I implemented was called my TAB philosophy. And with my students that were coming to me, and again, I would say this to any student. Now, my background, I'm skewed to inner city urban, primarily African-American schools, but very diverse schools overall. And what I had to help my students realize is they had value, because they were coming in and they were feeling devalued, whether it was parents who told them that they're terrible or they're rotten, or if it was family members or his community or it was whatever, they get beat down. They get beat down. And they have, and again, I don't care if you're rich, poor, in between, we get beat down. Again, there's different sets of beating downs, so to say, that take place depending upon populations, but it happens. And so I created what was called my TAB philosophy. TABs, so T-A-B, TAB. I wanted to help every student realize that they had a unique talent, something that they did as good, as well, or even better than anyone else. They had a unique talent, and that they could take this talent with their ability. So the A is the ability, that they have the ability to take that talent to be the B part, to be a blessing for others. I wanted to show every student then, you know, just because maybe they're not as good a reader as someone else, they maybe are better at math. And then maybe if they're not as good at math or reading, they're really great at some athletic competition. Or if they're not great at an athletic competition, they're a great artist. Or if they're not a great artist, they're a great speaker. If they're not a great speaker, they're a great thinker. If they're not, and we would just keep going through this to help them show their greatness, their talent in that area, and then that ability to take that talent to be a blessing. And so when we can get that focus to be more on the positive, that's when we can then have healthy reconciliation. Because if that, like you, I think this is where maybe you were going. If that student, you know, someone called them dumb or they called someone else dumb, it's probably coming from a place of hurt. It's coming from a place of loss. It's coming from a place of potential past trauma. It's coming from somewhere. Inferiority, whatever term you want to put with it, it's coming from something of that nature. So again, for true reconciliation, it's one to help the individual, ourself, to realize we have value. We have value. And if we can realize we have value, then hopefully we can translate to it that others have value. So just as we would want to be treated, that's how we want to be treating others. And then how do we reconcile that?
Also getting at there's kind of the importance and that interrelatedness between identity and agency. Having a solid sense of value and also an ability to understand, like, this is what I can do. And that is something I feel like is really unique to what teachers are able to encourage and foster in students and those that they work with. And also mentors as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Your facial expression, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. But then here's the other piece that comes into play with reconciliation is who's helping facilitate this. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking, and now I'll just talk education for a minute. If we're talking teachers, well, you got to do the same thing with them. Do they believe they have value? Mm-hmm. Do they believe that they can help, that they bring again positive things to the scene? Because many of them are hurting just as much, if not more, because they've grown up in this system or this life or whatever it might be, where they too haven't experienced true reconciliation, or they're struggling with it in their family or other relationships. So it just brings that whole other dynamic to it. But you are correct. The teachers have this ultimate opportunity to do that. But that's also where we've got to make sure that we're doing something with them to help them to see that value they bring.
It's definitely important because also you can get into things like the escalation of situations. But I also have a follow-up question for you, which is when we get into teachers who may be experiencing that or feeling that, what would you say to a teacher who came to you and said, hey, I'm struggling with this?
Yeah, I would take them back to their individual value that, and try to help them to see that individual value. So first, there's a technique out there, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. I think we've talked about it in the past, but I'll bring it up here. I would bring them to what I call IVA squared. So IVA squared. And then what that stands for is identify. Let's identify the emotion that you're feeling. Then the V is for validate. Whatever emotion that teacher is feeling, it's real. It's real. It's there. I can't. The worst answers you can give anyone is you shouldn't feel that way. Or you don't need to feel that. Or you don't, no, it's not my job to tell people how to feel. They're emotions. So I want to validate that. I want to say that's real. But then the A squared is, look, let's align that emotion. Let's align that. And for me, let's align it with scripture, or let's align it with tools, or let's align it with whatever, can help. And then the other A, the A squared, is for what are the action steps to come from it. So really, if I have a teacher, Ruth, I really want to sit down. I really want to know them. I want to know them as a person. I don't want to go into it with some prescriptive, just do this step, do this step, do this step. Yeah, that can work. And like you said in your intro, models and guidelines and things that are very helpful, very helpful. But it's got to start with the person. And that's where I think we lose it, is we don't deal with the person, we deal with the situation. And we've got to just start with the person.
It actually makes a lot of sense. And it kind of brings up something to mind for me as well. It's kind of a little bit outside of like the classroom or mentorship or that kind of a conversation. Because as I look around me today, I see a lot of conflict that's happening and a lot of broken relationships due to different things that are happening in society and in the world today. And one of the questions that brings up to mind for me is there a way back in terms of reconciliation? Is reconciliation advisable? Or like, if there is a way back, like, what would that look like?
I don't know. We live in a very challenging, but yet very wonderful world. It's challenging from a socioeconomic standpoint. It's challenging from a racial standpoint. It's challenging from a religious standpoint. It's challenging from a, rural versus city standpoint. I don't get whatever you want to put. It's challenging. But it's still a beautiful, wonderful world. And I'm not trying to pull Disney lyrics in here or anything like that. But there's still beauty in this world. But it's challenging. And Ruth, I think you hit it hard here, is from the standpoint that, now, I hadn't really thought about it this way, but you got me thinking this way, is the number one way to knock down the challenges in our world is to find reconciliation. How great and wonderful that would be. And that ultimately, that's really what Jesus, came back to do. Ultimately, yes, he came back to save us and to die and rise again so that we have victory over sin, over the devil, etc. And that is absolutely right. But he brought reconciliation for us and God. And now he wants to reconcile the entire world. There we go, Ruth. We have the answer to the world's problems, reconciliation. There we go. Put exclamation point here. We're good to go. One last thing I do want to mention. I really, really want to emphasize that as much as we would like to put a really specific process and just kind of stamp it, rubber stamp it. This is what you do every time for reconciliation. What you do is we really have to consider the individual in those situations, or the individuals in those situations. And we need to understand that there may be past trauma and experiences that people have gone through that make it more challenging and difficult for reconciliation, because they've been hurt or burned or disappointed or let down in the past so often. And that's where we really have to make this individualized to the person and to the situation and to the other people potentially involved if we're going to find true success. If we just try to do a one size fits all, I don't think we're going to get there. And just like in our world today, we were talking about that. It's not a one size fit, but we can go back to key components. So the key components for every situation are not going to change, from communication to honesty to trust to accountability. Those are all going to need to be a part of that process. But how we apply that process is going to depend upon the people and again, the past experiences that they've been through. So just keep that in mind as you go forward, that it's not one size fits all. But reconciliation, boy, if we could find reconciliation for the people around us, the world around us, we would be there.
Yeah, and I think it's important also to go back to the questions of like safety and wholeness within a relationship. Because sometimes it can be tempting to look at the idea of reconciliation and lean into why another person isn't responding to your attempts in the way that you feel like they should be.
That's so good. So good. I'm so glad you brought that up. Safety and wholeness, so important. And again, as I've worked with couples, students, families, the safety piece is so, so important. And I should have emphasized that more. Thanks for raising that again. But I will emphasize it here again, is people have to feel safe. I'm not talking about just generic safe zone, safe space. I'm talking about real safety, that they feel like they're not going to be attacked. They're not going to be abused. They're not going to be beat down, whatever it might be. So that safety is a really important piece that has to be built into there with the communication, accountability, and all the other vital pieces if there's going to be true reconciliation. So I'm glad you hit that specifically. Thanks, Ruth.
Something else that we can probably talk about that kind of leans into this area of reconciliation as well, as we're talking about teachers, has to do with burnout. Because that can also be something that is kind of disruptive to reconciliation within a relationship. One of the key signals of certain areas of burnout is actually that inability to show grace to another person. If there's a feeling like there's kind of like a misalignment with the level of commitment to a task, while that might not necessarily be something that would normally create that kind of a difficulty, it can if a person is burned out. What are your thoughts on that, Scott?
Burnout is a real-time issue. And it's not just burnout that comes through the work environment. It can be just burnout with relationships. It can be burnout with your children. It can be burnout with your energy, with your partner, but that burnout is a real deal. And it means something different to everyone. We all have different energy levels, so to say, of how we approach things. Some people, and let's just talk about work. So some people can work 80 hours a week, be excited, be thrilled. You know, they're working on things they love. They just love doing the work. Whereas somebody else, after 40 hours, they're done. They're mentally, physically, emotionally exhausted, and they're checked out. And usually it's because they're not doing things that they enjoy or that they love. And then there's also something, maybe a topic down the road, Ruth, we can dig deeper into. I'm not an expert in any way, but there are definitely different generational approaches to this too. But no, that burnout is real, and it inhibits people's ability to work on reconciliation, because they're like, one more thing, oh, what? Now I got to talk to someone else. I'm not doing it. And then reconciliation is no longer important because they're exhausted. Mentally, physically, spiritually, however you want to put it. And you're right. When people are burned out, if they're pressed, they're either going to retract or they're going to explode. There's very little in between. I think that that's where we've hit in the world of education. I think teachers are burnt out, especially urban teachers. I think COVID is already biting us in the butt on that one. Because again, we lost so much time, so much face-to-face time, so much quality time with our students. And then teachers got into some bad habits. Administrators got into bad habits. I got into bad habits during that time. And we've got to come out of that. We're still recovering from that. So I think we're still seeing a lot of that is impacting the burnout too. And then, you know, like in the education world, lack of support from parents and families and et cetera. And then, you know, teachers aren't perfect. So again, they make mistakes in marriages and relationships. We make mistakes, but you said something before. You said we lack grace. We lack grace. That's, I have heard, you're about the 15th person now that I've heard say that, that we need to have more grace in these time periods. We need to have more grace. And grace is undeserved love. Grace is, you know, somebody maybe didn't earn it. They maybe don't deserve it. But we need to approach it with more grace rather than fire and venom and anger and frustration. When you're burnt out, there's very little grace. There's little grace for yourself. There's little grace for others. That was an extremely important point that you brought up. So that's, I see more and more of it, and I don't see it getting better. That's the sad part. I don't want to be fatalistic. It can get better, but I don't know what's going to have to happen to allow that to get better. I'm not sure. And it's very real, seeing it more and more, but I know it's increasing. I can just say from Gallup polls that the dissatisfaction in the workplace is at an all-time high from when they've been tracking it. So when dissatisfaction in the workplace is at an all-time high, that's an indicator of burnout. So anyone out there experiencing burnout, we got to get back to, again, appreciating our, and it goes back to reconciliation. It goes back to reconciling with yourself. And then also looking at, what am I doing? Am I working? Is my professional life in alignment with my missional purpose, my drive? Because if you're just working for the sake of working, that's just gonna speed up the burnout. But when you're working on something you're passionate about, that you love and you enjoy, that decreases that burnout. So that's one aspect you can start looking at for yourself, and all of us need to be looking at that, quite honestly. All right. Well, as you know, we've been talking about some pretty heavy topics today between reconciliation and burnout, and it may come across today a little bit heavier that way. And they're serious topics, and we need to talk about them. But you know, one of the things that we think is a good way to get out of that burnout is to change the story. Ruth, maybe you've got an example where you've changed the story on something in your life, what you're doing. So what are your thoughts there on changing the story to get out of that burnout?
So most immediately for me, one of the things that kind of comes to mind is when I was in undergrad school, where a couple of times, one in particular, we were given an assignment. I was kind of feeling overwhelmed from everything, kind of burned out as you can be as a student as well. And one of the things I decided I was going to do was bring a manhole cover to class for a project. It was interesting because even my teacher at the time thought I wouldn't be able to do it.
Did you say you said a manhole cover, right?
Yeah, manhole cover.
Okay.
Manhole
all right. Cover.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever stopped to read a manhole cover, but there are some of them that do say communication at the top. And since I was a communication student, it seemed very appropriate. So because the teacher said that, they would actually give me some points if I managed to actually do that, I called up the city and was like, hey, so my teacher doesn't think I'll be able to do this, but it's for a school project. Can you help me out? I need a manhole cover. We were able to get that done. My academic advisor actually took me over there with a dolly, and we got it loaded and took it to my class.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of a way of switching things up because it wasn't kind of the status quo for the way I did assignments. So there's different things like that, I would say, especially with changing up the narrative.
Well, I think that's brilliant. I think that's a brilliant thing, is changing the story, changing the narrative, but that perspective, and you're feeling that burnout, you're feeling run down, you're feeling in a rut. And so you decided, I'm not sure my mind would have gone to it, but you decided to bring in a manhole. That's a new one to me. I've never had a student bring in a manhole.
Manhole cover.
Oh, sorry. Manhole cover. Right. So manhole cover, period. Aren't those like super heavy?
They are, which is why we needed a dolly.
Yeah, my fear would be some kind of injury. I'd be afraid of having to go before the HR department if I had students do that or something. But no, that's a great way to change your perspective. I can think of schooling, talk about schooling, changing the perspective. My story is maybe not as funny or as interesting as yours, or if it's vivid. But when I was working on my doctoral work and things like that, I was doing it for the sake of doing it. And I wasn't really learning anything. I just did the requirements. So I was about two courses in, and I got to my third course, and basically I had to change the story. I said to myself, I'm going to do this course, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. I'm going to do it to learn and to grow. And then I'm going to change the story of just doing it for the sake of doing it, because I was burnt out. I was principal, teacher, working on my doctoral work, family, et cetera. I was just burnt out, and I just wasn't prioritizing it. So I changed my mindset to, I'm going to do the best with this. And if I can't do the best with this in this class, then I'm going to reevaluate it all and maybe just drop out and put it on pause. So I went into that with the attitude of just giving it my best, giving it my all, like I usually do. And it felt good. It felt right. And by the end, the professor said, yeah, no, some of the best work that they've seen. And I don't say that egotistically, but that's what I was looking for. I was looking to get back to who I was, what I was passionate for. I was passionate for learning. I was passionate for growing, but I wasn't doing that. Sure, I finished the classes, got credit for them, but I wasn't learning. So I had to change the story, or I had to change the book. That would have been the other thing. By changing the book, I mean, I would have gone to a different book. So rather than working on my doctoral degree, I would have needed to find something else to work on, because that it just wasn't happening. So not as good as a picturesque and as funny as a manhole cover, but I did get back on track with that class. And then I was able to push forward and really learn a lot through that. So change the story.
Yeah. I think I had kind of a similar experience to yours also with undergrad, which is kind of why I ended up switching up a little bit in terms of the way that I kind of approach things. Towards the end of this semester for one of my classes, I had been out quite a bit because of sickness and things like that. So I had to pick a location to work with to lead a training. And this is kind of one of my first experiences with that. I ended up picking a mental health place where they did counseling and things like that. They were looking for someone who could work with them on getting people to open up more because they were having some difficulties with that. And the idea that I had that I brought to them was basically teaching a training on writing as a healing instrument. Pretty much what ended up happening from there is I kind of learned more about the fact that I do like more working with adults with education, because before I was like, I'm not going to do anything that has to do with that topic. And actually seeing how what I did with that actually impacted people and helped to reach them for good. And I think one of the things kind of that is important with that, and that can be helpful, especially as we're looking at educators and mentors and roles like that, that are more people facing, is being able to identify kind of the impact that is had from being in those roles. Because sometimes in the act of doing something, we can kind of get lost and forget that.
Yeah, it's a nail on the head. I love what you're saying, because, and this just sparks other thoughts here, Ruth, too, and hopefully for others out there, is, again, changing that story, changing the narrative, but getting back to what you're passionate for. In working with people, what they're passionate for. So tell me again, what did you specifically do with them in this training?
The training was over writing as a healing instrument. So okay. It was interesting because it's one of those things that we're going to be talking about later, which is kind of failing forward. Because with that, I had gone into that scenario also expecting that there would be a PowerPoint presentation or something I could like show that on, only to find out that in the space for training, they did not have technology. They had a whiteboard.
Nice.
So that was also one of those things that at the front end made me kind of be like, I don't know how helpful or effective this is going to be, but I'm just going to try it.
I know that's funny. Yeah, we had to check the equipment that we have there. But again, in the short-term assignment. And with that, though, is that idea of finding different mechanisms to help people get through that burnout, to get even that it's applicable to reconciliation, to find the different mechanisms that help people to get past the past, get through. I don't think you ever get past it, but to get through it in the time, or to at least manage it you know, past trauma experiences, etc. And so with that in mind, it's that idea, I love it, of the writing therapy. It just brings to my mind too of, you know, the equestrian therapy, the, you know, music might help you release. But it's that idea of getting back to your passion. So most of the time, looking at my life, when I felt burnt out, Ruth, you probably felt the same way. You're feeling burnt out. It's because we're outside of our passions, or we're not feeling passionate about it. And now some will say, passion is overused. You don't have to. Well, what I mean by passion, I'm not talking about like jumping out of your seat, you know, the, you know, all of that. I'm just saying that you've got to believe in it. You've got to believe that it's part of your core purpose. It's got to fit somehow in there. I feel so bad for people that go out there day in and day out and just start doing things that are just so outside of who they're gifted to be. That's where you see all that burnout coming. And there's been times and moments in my life where that's been me. I've been probably, you'd say the same thing, right, Ruth? There are times and moments in your life where that's been you.
Yeah.
Maybe more than you want to mention. But no, that's fitting. That's fitting. So I don't know. Thanks, Ruth. Again, that I know we've talked about that manhole cover in the past, but thanks for reminding me of that story. That's a good one.
And I think talking about mindset shifts kind of brings to mind the idea of entrepreneurship. How can those be effective in that kind of a context?
Yeah, no, it really does. It ties in nicely with entrepreneurship. If most successful entrepreneurs are doing the things that, again, they believe in, or I would say synonymously have a passion for, depending upon what you define, how you define passion. But again, if you want to go with what you believe for, what you have a purpose for, that drives you in entrepreneurship, because most entrepreneurs are doing it. Yeah, they want to make money. But most are not doing it, at least at first, when they are really entrepreneurial, when it's truly an entrepreneurial company, you know, the first, you know, 3 to 5, you know, 1 to 5 years, basically, when it's truly entrepreneurial, they're doing it because they have a passion for it and they believe in it. Yes, they need resources, they need finances to come in. But where you see entrepreneurs lose their spirit, where they become burnt out, is when what they've done, what they've created, what they've put into place is now rock solid. And now they're like, oh, you know, now it becomes managing a company rather than managing that product, that purpose, that passion. And that's when they lose their passion. That's when they get out of it. That's when they sell it. Or they just, it fizzles. And I've seen that so often where people start so excited with things, but then when it gets to the point where they find success, that they're like, I'm done. I'm done. Because then society has forced it upon us. Now it's about the money. Now it's about, you know, having all the paperwork and everything else. But you're so spot on that entrepreneurship goes back to, what is that story? And what is that story we have passion for? I mean, you see it with the different things you've started up, Ruth. When you've started things up and you have that passion for it, it drives you, right? You don't want to stop.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to, I got to have money to do this, I say to people all the time, I wish we lived in a world where money isn't the thing, because I would just love to go out and, you know, help schools around the country or help couples around the country, but I got to have them pay. Yeah, sure, I can do some donated work and things like that, but unfortunately, I need financial resources to live, et cetera. I got a mortgage to pay, all those things, and that just sucks the passion out of it. So boy, if we can put two to two together to really help with that entrepreneurial spirit, that's when it's exciting. That's when it's awesome. And that's when you don't have burnout. So I'll give you one more example. In the chiropractic world, now again, this is, I don't have a ton of research to base this, but I can just base it on personal experiences with chiropractors. I've had so many different chiropractors tell me they love being a chiropractor. They love helping people. They love doing what they do. But so many of the chiropractors that I know are not practicing chiropractors anymore. They're in sales at a company, or they're this or that. It's because they wanted to do the chiropractic work. But what killed them was the business side. The collections and working with insurance companies and all these different regulations. It's because they that's not their passion. Entrepreneurs are motivated by passion for their ideas, to make a positive impact on the people in the world around them. That is awesome. That's what you do. That's what you do. I like to think that's what I would like to do more of. I don't do it perfectly, but that's what I'd like to do more of.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and transition from that. We kind of did a thing. So we started an audio series. Voice in Middle Ground, the nonprofit behind this podcast, hosts a monthly book club. And we've created an audio series called Read This in 5 to go with that. Here's a sneak peek. And to hear more or to access the full episode of Read This in 5 and future episodes, subscribe to the Ruth and Scott podcast newsletter. And here is a clip.
And now for thoughts from a reader like you.
So we read Rescuers, Portraits of Moral Courage in the Holocaust. And I found this book, you know, it offered a view into the lives of those who made courageous decisions, broken into interviews and insights. I was kind of taken with how often that people describe their decision to help others at great personal risk as just a conventional decision or something that just felt like needed to be done. And a lot of it was really based, obviously, on their belief in helping others. And even over the various regions that were explored, there was this common sentiment and extremely different experiences of doing what's right. And reading each story, however brief, they were really unique and offered a perspective on a shared experience that really made me consider what decisions I make and how a similar reflection, how would those decisions feel courageous or conventional or as defining as the ones that appeared here? And so it was a really fascinating read and self-reflection point of how history seems to repeat itself, and we find ourselves in vastly different scenarios on a day-to-day basis, and yet we have so many opportunities to step in and do the right thing.
All right, so that was a bit from the new audio series, Read This in 5. Again, you can get access to the full episode by subscribing to the newsletter. Basically, the episode itself, we kind of go into the books that we're reading as part of book club and talk also about how they can be introduced and talked about, like, in a classroom setting.
No, it's tremendous. And again, specific one on the Rescuers, Portraits of Moral Courage. There's so much to unpack from that, so much to look at. And again, one of the common themes that was brought out in that little bit of the highlight is the idea that people do extraordinary things without really realizing they are. And that's a point of encouragement for all of us. People do extraordinary things just because it's the right thing to do. And they don't view it as extraordinary because they just view it as it's the right thing. It's a good thing. For all of us, it's a good reminder that sometimes we get down on ourselves, when we get negative on ourselves, but in reality, you're all amazing. You're all amazing. You're all fearfully and wonderfully made, and don't forget that. So, great reminder. Exciting series. Good to be connected with that. And I'm glad that that's there for people, for all of us.
I think that's a good place for us to end today's episode. Thank you for listening. And to reach us directly, you can email us at admin@podcast.votmg.org. Again, that's admin@podcast.votmg.org. Or you can subscribe to the newsletter. And the link for that is in the description.
Thanks, y'all.